Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hey guys, Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show, where we help you to stand out and to get ahead at work. Now, as you know, we like to switch things up here, keep it interesting, and to continue that tradition, today on the podcast, instead of me interviewing an expert guest, we're going to have the guest deep dive into their topic. You see, you'll be hearing audio from a LeadX webinar. Now, of course, there are dozens of great webinars on leadership, management, communication, productivity, and more, all archived in the LeadX app. Just visit leadx.org for more information about our webinar archive. So enough on the setup, enough background information. Here is Vanya Mathis to introduce our guest and to hand it over to them. Enjoy.
Thanks for watching How to Effectively Lead and Navigate Stress and Chaos. Our next host is going to help you understand the origins and impact of stress, explain how increased EQ can help you manage stress, and he'll provide a few different types of approaches that you can use to combat the feelings of anxiety you may have right now. He's also going to discuss a very simple practice that you can do every day to increase your well-being and resilience. Our host is the founder of Emory Leadership Group, has a master's in organizational leadership, and is an expert on emotional intelligence. He's a member of the Forbes Coaches Council and Harvard Business Review Advisory Board. Please welcome Patrick Verinou.
Hi, everyone. This is Patrick Verinou. I'm here to do a webinar on how to effectively navigate stress and lead slash help others. And the reason I have lead in there is because, to me, as we go through this, I think you'll see that this is not just a workshop on how to navigate stress internally, but to me, this is a leadership workshop, which is where I spend most of my time working with organizations. So a little bit of background behind me. I run a podcast called Lead Like No Other, Actions That Inspire, which will soon be changing to Leadership Reimagined. And that really is based on a lot of the work that I've been doing. This podcast has been in existence for almost 2 years now. But some of my background, I established my business in 2008, which for those that remember, that was our last financial crisis. So I'm familiar with this space for what that's worth. And there really are three areas that I focus my work on. One is on emotional intelligence. A model that I use is out of Australia. The group is called Genos, and it's a workplace model. I also do a lot of work in both DISC and the five dysfunctions of a team and combining those. And then the last piece, it's like a three-legged stool, is around influence and bias research. And I was able to get certified and trained under a gentleman named Robert Cialdini down in Phoenix, Arizona. The three of those, for all of the work that I do and what we're going to talk about today in regards to stress management and leading, are all relevant, and pieces of those will come out throughout this. So here's some contact information for me as well. And I will start this out, as I mentioned, to me, this is a leadership workshop, even though we're talking about stress management. And I say that from this quote, John Quincy Adams said, if your actions inspire someone to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, you're a leader. Nothing in here about a title. And I think we really have an opportunity. It's our actions that will inspire others, and how we relate to stress and navigate stress ourselves will have the ability to impact other people around us too. And that's why they're so important. So the objectives here, right, explore the biological, psychological, and social aspects of the human stress response. And it is a response. And we're going to look at it really from a few different areas, right? The physical, emotional, spiritual, and intellectual impact of stress. And it really does impact all of those. So then we'll look at understanding what are some of the coping strategies that we can use to either increase or what ones damage our resilience. And this really is meant to be almost a buffet, even though you probably can't find buffets anymore because of the environment we're in, that this really will be an opportunity to take a look at what are some different strategies that I can use that fit in my lifestyle. You don't need to choose them all, but there's something here for everybody in terms of how you can effectively navigate stress yourself or help somebody else. And then from there, we'll look at a model that I put together And it's a journal actually called the Power Journal. And there are a number of activities in here that promote both well-being and resilience. And this is based on a lot of research. I will say foundationally, one of them is based on one that was done by a gentleman named Sean Aker, who is a Harvard researcher. And he did what was called the 21-Day Challenge. And he actually did this back in, I believe, 2009. So at that point of financial crisis before. And he actually did it with a company that was in the financial industry. And what they found when they did these activities that we'll talk about at the end, that the individuals that were able to follow through on this 21-day challenge found themselves to be in a happier place. And to me, if we can identify those things and find that and find a way to be happier, we build more resilience and well-being. And I think all of us want that, especially now. So a couple pieces of research, right, talking about the origins of stress. If you weren't familiar before, you probably are now in regards to the CDC. Their definition of stress, harmful physical and psychological responses when job requirements don't match capabilities and skills, resources, or needs of the worker. And I think in the environment that we're in now, most of us probably feel stress in one of those areas. Now, what's important here is this CDC definition also goes on to say that this should not be confused with challenges. And I've listed eustress here because we need stress. Stress is important for us as well because it provides us an opportunity to grow and improve. It's only when we lose control of it that it becomes damaging to us. And really, that's what this workshop or webinar is focused on doing is providing ways that we can take the stress that we're dealing with, the situations that we're dealing with, and find ways to navigate those, and I would say almost leverage these. So the next piece I'll talk about is this one that was done by the American Psychological Association. This was a survey, 2014, where they surveyed a little over 3,000 individuals. And they asked them questions in four different areas: work, money, family, and health. I've only listed two here as it relates to both work and financial stress. But I think if we were to take this today, we probably would all agree that all four of these would probably be higher than 60%. But in this, what they did was they asked individuals, where are you on this level? And 60% felt that their work stress was significant. 64% of respondents felt their financial stress was significant. And the fourth bullet here is, I think, so important in the environment we're in right now. Emotional support mattered. 43% of those without emotional support said that their stress had increased over the previous year. And 43% of those also said that they experienced depression. Now, we look at that as it compares with those that felt they had emotional support. 26% of that group said that their stress had increased over the previous year. And about a third had experienced depression. And I think that is so important to note because when we think about social distancing, the only place that social distancing is really of value to us right now is as it relates to our physical health and not catching the virus. Other than that, social distancing has probably provided more stress for us and been sort of counterproductive in other areas because we're pack animals. We don't work well in isolation. So when we look in terms of causes of stress, you can see here I've listed perceived lack of control. And I do believe that's important, that oftentimes our stress, the root cause of it, is based on a perceived lack of control. And once we feel as though we have some control over the situation, we will often find that our stress lowers because we're in the driver's seat at this point, or at least we're doing things that will help alleviate that. And it's important to recognize. So when we think about this in terms of causes, we've got both external and internal causes. The external causes are family, work, economics, school, major life changes, unforeseen events, isolation. I think if I were to speak with everybody listening to this, I think we could agree probably every one of those is being impacted right now. And when we look in terms of internal causes, right, it's the worry, the fear, the attitudes, unrealistic expectations, or maybe even past experiences. People have been through somewhat of a similar situation, and it's almost as though they have bad memories of going through this before, and they they bring that forward and they interpret what happened in the past, it's going to happen again. So when we look at signs and symptoms of stress, we can go through cognitive, behavioral, emotional, physiological. So cognitive, decreased concentration, comprehension, and memory. And we know through research, when we put people in stressful situations, even in very rudimentary tasks, that oftentimes people don't perform as well. They make more mistakes. So we know that stress really has a negative impact on our cognitive ability. Certainly behaviorally, we see it around us, right? Irritability, withdrawal, violence, emotional, fear, anxiety, depression, fatigue, and then physiological, right? Increased blood pressure, increased heart rates, respirations, sleep issues. And I think what's important to note here as well, decreased immune responses. Here we are trying to provide an environment so that we don't catch the virus. And oftentimes the stress that we are under undermines that. And it's how do we gain control of that? So when we look a little deeper into some of the areas where stress is associated with certain diseases, we can look, the list is pretty long here. And this isn't all of them. Now, that said, this is not to say that if I have stress, I will somehow be the recipient of these. But it certainly is to say that we know from a research perspective, there's a link between stress and these diseases that we run into. So it's important to recognize that. Next, I'll talk about what's called the effects of the wandering mind. And this was done by two researchers, a gentleman named Matt Killingsworth and another named Dan Gilbert. They sampled 2,250 adults. And what they did was, based on iPhones, they sent them texts randomly throughout the day. And when that person received that text, they had to answer these three questions. How are you feeling right now? What are you doing right now? And are you thinking about something other than what you are currently doing? And what they found was that almost 47% of the time that when people received that text, they weren't really doing what they were thinking about. And I think that's so important because, as you can see the next bullet here, people found to be considerably less happy when their mind was wandering. And I have here, in my humble opinion, this is evidence for the need for routines and structure, which we'll talk about more. I think the more times that we are in spaces where we're not occupying ourselves, it gives us more time to wander. And in the environment that we're in right now, I believe that this can be even more detrimental to us because there are so many negative stories out there that we can attach to that we start to ruminate on these things. And we'll talk about that more later. So a couple areas of thinking traps that I wanted to bring up here. One is called the victim. Other people or circumstances are the sole cause of your problems or setbacks. I think that's important to recognize in this situation. Catastrophizing is the next one. Ruminating about irrational worst-case outcomes of a situation. So I could sit here and think, well, you know, my business from a consulting standpoint is, a lot of it is in healthcare, some of it is in defense contracting, but it primarily involves me being inside an organization and working with them, and that's on hold right now. So I could say, well, my income is diminished because of that, and because my income is diminished, I'm not going to be able to pay for my college education, my sons, maybe the investments that we have are going to diminish. I'm not going to be able to retire. If I can't retire, you know, I'm going to live on the streets. My son's not going to be able to graduate. We just go down a dark path, which is called catastrophizing. And then lastly is around helplessness. Negative events are going to impact all areas of your life and you have no control. So back to that, right? Lack of control and stress. When we feel like we're helpless, our level of stress goes up. That's really what we're feeling right now. No vaccine, no treatments, not enough resources, it adds stress to us. So when we look at coping approaches, we can look at this in two different buckets. One are positive coping and the other we can put as negative. And how we can also look at these is, one is about responding. These are sort of long-term ways that we can deal with coping. And the other is coping in the moment, right? The reactive type of coping. So when we first look at the positive types of coping strategies, the list can be pretty long here, right? So when we start out, realistic expectations, so important, right? Set realistic expectations and goals. that if you're working from home now and you have a house full of other people that are either going to school or working from home as well, then recognize my day needs to have structure, but it's not going to look like it does when I'm away at the office. And as well, there are going to be bad days. And if there are five of us in the house and each one of us has our own bad day, then that could be a week of bad days. And we need to understand that. So you can see here the last line that I've got there, remain positive while planning for challenges. It's this dance between expecting things are going to work out, but also what am I going to do if they don't? And I've got the example here of Sully and US Air, because I think it's one of the best examples of planning. And for those of you that don't remember, Sully was the airline pilot that put the plane down in the Hudson River after he had engine problems. And when people asked him, how did you do that? You sounded so calm when you were talking to the tower. And he said, well, that's just what we planned it for. We train for those type of events. And the same thing is true here, that as much as we need to be positive, we also need to expect that things are going to go poorly. And what am I going to do when that happens? How can I deal with that ahead of time? So the next is around routines. Maintain a schedule. This goes back to that wandering mind. I've got listed here, get dressed. I think for people that maybe are not used to working at home, and they now are, get dressed. Don't stay in pajamas or sweatpants or don't take a shower, because when we do that, mentally we are out of position. So next, limit news streaming. I think that is so important, right? We don't need to know what's going on all the time. And quite honestly, most of the news that we hear is not positive. And if we have too much time and that's playing in the background, all we're doing is our mind is being fed with all of the things that are going wrong right now. And it is damaging to us. So the next is around reframing. Change the way you look at things. How will I get stronger? Right? How will I get stronger because of this? Journaling is another powerful tool that we can use where you actually write out it. It gives us an opportunity to process what's going on. But I would challenge you to focus on how will I be stronger because of this? Because we know through research that oftentimes what we focus on is what we attach to. And if we ask ourselves questions about why things are so bad right now, we will come up with plenty of reasons and evidence as to why things are so bad right now. So next is around nutrition and hydration. Again, I think it's so important for our immunity is to make sure that we're doing everything we can ourselves. So just a couple things that I've noted here. There are many more, and there are resources. There are links that will be at the end of this webinar. But the first one is based on an interview that I had with a personal trainer who spoke about the amount of water that we should be getting, the ideal amount. And the calculation that he suggested was take your body weight and multiply it by 0.6, and that should be your ideal ounces in water that you want to drink during the day. And most of us, when you do that number, are going to be astounded and realize that we drink far less water than we probably should. For me, I weigh about 200 pounds, so that's almost a gallon of water a day. Next is when we look at relaxation, right? Learn relaxation techniques. Take time out for leisure. There's so much in the research out there in regards to mindfulness activities. It's so valuable for us. And there will be a number of links and suggestions at the end of this as how you do that. It can be very simple. And lastly, I have there, find your happy place. And what I mean by that is, again, if you're working from home continuously right now, that if you can, and I know it's different for everybody, if there are spaces within your house that you can keep to just leisure activities, that you don't do any work there. So if I'm in the living room, I don't do any of my work in the living room if possible. And I know we all have different situations, but the reason being is because I don't want to confuse the time that I relax with the time I'm working. And those lines have really become blurred with us spending as much time in our houses. The next is about this idea of discussing the problems, right? Utilize existing social supports to solve problems. And even though we are socially distanced, there are still tools that we can use, FaceTiming, Zoom, Skype, whatever it might be, that we're having conversations, just using the phone, picking people up and picking up the phone and having conversations with individuals, how important that is. So next, when we talk about some of the negative coping, right? Avoidance and withdrawal in and of itself, right? Don't socially distance yourself within your own house continuously. That can create its own set of problems. Negative attitudes, right? Creating a contagion effect. Anger outbursts, not being able to control my emotions. Alcohol and drugs, we know that those over time become depressants. Negative self-talk, it's never going to get better, right? Resentment, it's somebody else's fault. And then violence. These are things that are very reactionary that we often do, but in the long run, they don't provide us the value that we need in terms of developing resilience. So next we talk about coping and resilience, right? The coping is the day-to-day ability to control emotions, ability to perceive reality, ability to think rationally, and an ability to problem solve. Now, if I get to day 3 or 4 and all of a sudden my ability to control my emotions is gone, that's where resilience needs to kick in. That's the long-term play on this. That's my ability to bounce back so that I am able to regroup and find ways to control my emotions again. My ability, the positive capacity to cope with stress, that's really what it does, and it provides resistance to negative events. I've listed here resourcefulness, and I think it's so important to think about this right now, is that we're all in situations where we're lacking resources, time, money, space, privacy, whatever that is. We all have equal access to resourcefulness. Nobody has any more than anybody else if they choose to, meaning that my ability to find a way around that is up to me. And we all have that ability. So when we talk about resilience builders, you can see here, I've got a number listed. I'll hit on each of them just briefly. So positive role models, humor, optimism, religion and spirituality, social support, thought records, and the power journal. So first, when we look at positive role models, it's so important that these are positive contagions, that when we're around people that their attitudes are good, it often bleeds onto us. We feel that. Values, right? People that we're around, that their values around empathy and generosity, and I've got listed here, competitive. I think that can be important too, to be around people that look at this and say, we're going to come out of this stronger. I don't know how yet, but we're going to come out of this stronger. It's somebody that's looking at this as a challenge that will be overcome. And it's especially important when I'm not feeling that way to find other people that maybe they'll boost me up. So skills, problem solving, people that I can reach out to talk to vent on something and get their perspective on it. Well, with that, I need behaviors, right? People that are good listeners and encouraging. Find these people and find regular times to interact with them because they create a positive contagion. We know there are enough negative individuals out there. Find the people that are positive and leverage that contagion. So next we move on to optimism and expectancy. Positive beliefs, it's so important. Cognitive reframing, the thought record, which we'll talk about in a moment, but a belief in a meaningful cause, like that there's something that is going to come of this. And I know it's difficult at times, but we really need to look at it that way. There's no other option for us when we really think about it. So I've got the green X here though as well, because I'm going to sort of talk out of both sides of my mouth, is that it's important to also recognize negative factors, to be able to say things like, I'm struggling, I'm scared, I'm sad. If you're leading other people, even if you're a parent, I think this is important, because what it does is it gives other people permission to be able to say that those things are okay. They're natural. And when we're able to do that and exhibit that ourselves, it gives those around us the opportunity to be more open about their conversations with us. And that's where I talk about this, about a leadership webinar, that it's our actions that will inspire others. That the last thing I want is my children to stifle how they're feeling right now because they think, well, it doesn't bother Dad. He's not talking about this, and maybe I'm overreacting to it. Now, the flip side of that from a leadership perspective is I will always talk about this and say, what I don't want is a person that I'm following that every day is saying, I'm scared again, I don't know where I'm going, all of these sort of, you know, I'm lost. But I do want that to be in that person's capabilities to be able to do that. That builds trust in that individual. So next is around humor. We know how important humor is in regards to everything from a healing perspective in medical research. And we all can find different ways to engage in humor. It could be movies, it could be books, it could be jokes, it could be things that are being shared on Instagram or Facebook or wherever that might be, but make that a regular part. Find ways to laugh every day, and you can. It's so important for our emotional health to be able to do this. So when we talk about religion and spirituality, and this doesn't endorse any religion, this is simply to look at, there's ample research around people that practice a religion or have a spirituality, that it's associated with psychological and physical well-being, guards against despair. So it's faith, hope, provides a social support. There's belongingness, which we'll talk more about, provides positive role models, and provides a positive mission around being for others. So as I mentioned, belongingness, the social support, we know how important that is. Social support has a profound effect on life expectancy. Isolation and poor social support are associated with poor stress response and despair. Patients have better outcomes with strong social support. And I've got listed here, right? Few hardy individuals go it alone and eventually will perish. If there's one thing I think that we're really learning out of this global struggle, is that we need each other. And this idea that self-made, nobody is self-made. It is a myth that unless I birthed myself, I made the roads that I drive on, the car I drive in, the house I live in, the food that I eat, the clothes that I wear, the computer I'm using right now. It's ridiculous when you think about it that way. And to me, it's the same way to think of anybody as being self-made. That said, I think through this, what you can be is self-motivated. That's the difference. To achieve and to overcome, we need to be self-motivated, not self-made. And to play out this belongingness research, that if we were to go back 10,000 years and look at being voted outside of a tribe, that was a death sentence. You couldn't do it on your own. And the same thing is true today. When we isolate ourselves on teams, or we're isolated on teams or in schools, it creates a different death, but it is still a death. So next I'll list here cognitive behavioral therapy. And this is one exercise that I use in some of the training that I will do around conflict management or stress management on a larger scale. Rational responses. Challenge your thoughts in a helpful, realistic, and balanced way. And this is something you could do for yourself. This is something you could help somebody else do. What is the evidence that my automatic thought is true? And I would say here, not just or untrue, I would say and untrue. Because what we need to do is to look and think, there are things that will contradict why I'm right on this. And maybe if you're so convinced, you don't need to do the true part. Just do the part that shows there's evidence out there that backs that what I'm thinking could be wrong. Next is, what's the worst, best, and most realistic thing that could happen? I think that's so important, right? Because what do? We often go to the worst case scenario, that catastrophizing. And this helps us to sort of level set or to help somebody else, right? Could I live through it? What's the bigger picture? Am I thinking in all or nothing terms? What can I do to solve the problem? What's the difference this will make in 2 weeks or 10 years, and you can change this to 4 weeks and 5 years, whatever. But just giving an opportunity to really slow ourselves down. That's what this process does. It creates a buffer for us to say, let's look at this differently. And this forces us to do this. I would challenge you, when you're doing this, write it down, because we know when we write, it becomes more impactful. So lastly, we'll talk about the power journal. As I mentioned, this was based on a lot of research from a lot of different perspectives, and the journal that everybody will have the opportunity to get for free, no call to actions, nothing else that you have to do. It can be so valuable in terms of building resilience. And in this 21-day challenge that I reference, Sean Aker did this with this group in the financial industry back in 2009. And they only did do 5 things, and they didn't even have to do all of them every day for 21 days. But the first one they had to do was think of 5 things every morning that they're grateful for. Now, in this, what they were challenged to do was every time they wrote those down, that every day that they did it, it had to be different. So when you think about this for the first 3 to 5 days, that can be pretty easy. When you get to day 15, it gets a little more difficult, right? To now be thinking of, I've had to think of 45 different things that I'm grateful for. But that's exactly the point, is that when we start to string this out, it forces us to focus on, there are a lot more things that we can be grateful for that oftentimes we often just take for granted. And when we look at those, it changes our frame of mind. So the next was that people had to do something for somebody else. Every day, just do something for somebody else. Could be buy somebody coffee behind you. Call somebody up. Tell them that you were thinking about them. You haven't talked to them in a while. Recognize somebody. Just something every day that was for somebody else that had no personal gain for you. It was all about somebody else. Then next, people had to, at the end of the day, write down for 2 to 3 minutes or 2 to 3 sentences what went well for the day. And if we step back, we think we've started our day out from gratitude. We're ending our day in a positive place too, that we're writing down what went well for the day. And I don't know about you, but oftentimes in our world, what we think of is, what didn't I get done today before I go to bed? Or what do I need to do tomorrow that maybe I don't want to do? And we know when we're talking about restorative sleep, going to bed, that's not healthy for us to go to bed thinking about something that's really kind of stressed us out. I didn't get done what I wanted to, or this happened that I didn't like, or I'm dreading this interaction tomorrow. When we can go to bed in a place of what went well today, and we can think of something that went well during the day. The next is exercise. Participants were asked to do just 10 minutes of exercise a day. Now, the research that I reference in this Power Journal is, one of them is around a study that was done with patients that had been clinically diagnosed with a major depressive episode. And what these patients did was they were put into 3 different groups. One group had an antidepressant. One group was given an antidepressant, the same one, plus exercise. And the other was just exercise alone. And the exercise for both groups was 3 days a week, 30 minutes of exercise. So 3 days a week for 30 minutes. And what they found was, at the end of 4 months, the exercise group did the best. Now, when they followed up 10 months later, they found that the exercise group alone was still doing better than either the antidepressant group by itself or the antidepressant group plus exercise. Now, this isn't to say that anybody that's on an antidepressant should just stop and work out for 30 minutes, 3 days a week. But what it does speak to is the power that exercise has on our neurochemicals and how that can help us out. The last thing here is around relaxation. People were asked that participated just 2 minutes a day of quiet meditation. And there are so many ways that you can do this. You could focus just on your breathing for 2 minutes a day. And we know how powerful that can be in terms of resetting ourselves and reducing our stress. And in the journal that you'll have access to, there are a number of different suggestions in terms of how you can practice relaxation, especially from a mindfulness perspective. And there are resources and links that will be available that will help you find other ways to do this. But all of these things, if we follow just this, it's less than an hour a day, less than an hour a day to do this. Now, to help, what I've done is, at the end of this journal, there's a tracker here, and this is actually 3 months. And what you can do is keep track of on each of these things. Praise is the 3 things I'm grateful for. Others is doing for something else, somebody else. Writing is, at the end of the day, the exercise is self-explanatory, and the relaxation. Which ones am I doing each day? To keep track and to hold yourself accountable to this, to doing it. Because if you do this, it will impact you in a positive way. It's been proven. So to receive the Power Journal, you'll see on this slide at the bottom is my website, Emory Leadership Group. And again, it'll be right on the first page there. You can download it, and you will not be asked for anything other than, I will ask you to do this. That's it. That is the call to action, to do this. So as we sort of wrap things up, there are a couple things that I think are still very relevant. And this was a post that I had on LinkedIn a few weeks back, and it has to do with the jack pine cone. And I had read about this well over a year ago, and it really came back to me as I think about the environment we're in right now. The seeds in the jackpine pine cone don't release until it has experienced extreme heat, such as a forest fire. Once that occurs, new growth is possible. As you can see here in the picture, this is charred earth after a fire. The pine cones are burned, and here we have the jackpine pine cone, new growth. Many today are experiencing what feels like a catastrophic fire. I don't deny that. But my belief on that is if we think about this just like the jackpine pine cone, that pine cone doesn't open up. The resin is too thick on it, and it can't open up until it's under extreme heat and stress, stuff that is not comfortable. But when it does, new growth happens. And I believe that in our own lives, there are many of us out there right now that are going to be opened up in ways that we never knew we could. And if we look at those for opportunities for growth, we will find them. We will find them. And if you listen to any of the podcasts that I put out there, many of them are around the challenges that I had in my own life growing up. And I will tell you, they relate directly to this. I have some things that I dealt with in my life that I wouldn't be the person I am today if it wasn't for those things. And I believe the same thing will happen from this. So one last piece, this was a recent article that was in the Harvard Business Review, March 26th. There are just a couple quotes here that I think are important. The contagion we can control. This was the title of this article. And obviously it was in reference to the contagion of the virus. Couple of the quotes. While medical and public health leaders are working as hard as they can to control the spread of the novel coronavirus, experts in emotional intelligence also have something powerful to offer, a way to help us manage a different type of contagion that, if we let it run rampant, will only make things worse. And I truly believe that. And a lot of the things that we've talked about are directly related to managing our own emotions as part of that emotional intelligence. Next, it's easy to become infected by the negative emotions of coworkers, the newscast you're watching, friends on social media, or your family. In fact, you catch their anxiety and transfer it to others who relay it back to you in an almost unending circuit of negative emotion. And I truly believe that. That's where this, when I talk about positive role models, not only do we want to search them out, but we also want to emulate ourselves as a positive role model for others. And then lastly, reducing negative and bolstering positive emotional contagion will help us all weather this very unpredictable storm together. We have an opportunity here to be leaders, to inspire others. And the better we are at navigating our own stress and getting that under control, the more inspiring we will be for others. We cannot lead ourselves if we're in an unstressful situation. So as we close this out, reviewing in terms of practical tips, set realistic expectations, exercise regularly, eat healthy, get adequate sleep, maintain a work-leisure balance, practice positive reframing and optimism, enhance emotional support, that belongingness piece, and then practice the power journal. And as I close this out, you can see here I've listed internet resources for building resistance and diet and exercise, positive thinking, stress management, a number of different techniques that we can use that you all have access to, as well as references that are basically from the research that I did to put this slide deck together. And then lastly, here is my contact information. Again, I welcome anybody to reach out to me in regards to questions you may have as it relates to this or any other topic. I am more than happy to answer those, and I will do it as a courtesy to helping you with this scenario. And again, I can't encourage strongly enough to go on and download the Power Journal. It will make a difference for you. As well, I'd encourage you to listen to the Lead Like No Other podcast, where you'll hear a lot more about the work that I do to try and help individuals and organizations rise above their best. So I wish you the best of luck.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org, and we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?